Good morning. Our case for the argument this morning is the United States v. Amole. Mr. McGowan.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Andy McGowan. I'm with the Federal Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Davis Amole. In this case, the judge imposed a sentence, guideline sentence of 63 months, that the judge thought was too high. The judge further thought that he had to impose this sentence because of this court's opinion in this case. I do not agree with the district court's assessment of this court's opinion. I believe it's very clear that this court said that the judge could impose a lower than guideline sentence.
Did the district judge discuss that? The fact what he said?
The district court did not. The district court recused himself, from what I can tell from the record. Read it. I think he overread it. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it says we are not saying that any below guideline sentence for Davis would have been unreasonable.
I think that's relatively clear, and that's the way I would have interpreted it. However, I think he overthought it in terms of this court's criticism, perhaps, of other things that he said. And he explained that in his resentencing, but it's still...
Well, I'm not sure it was criticism. It just didn't square with the sentence. And he explained that he was trying to scare him, which...
I have no doubt that pretty much every judge on this panel has done that at some time or other to a defendant.
How... Never. How long of a term has Mr. Amole now served on the wire fraud count?
Your Honor, my answer to that is based on the Bureau of Prisons website when he's supposed to be released, I think from the whole thing, which is in September of 2012. So he's, by that calculation, he served almost 4 years essentially on this particular count that we're here on.
4 years.
Yeah. That'd be my assessment. Of it.
Is it a fair reading of the district court to say, I mean on remand now, that... he understood our mandate in a way that it didn't prohibit him from going below the guideline.
He did, but then he
couldn't come up with reasons, right?
Well, that's one way of looking at it, perhaps.
You don't think that's an
I don't think that's
agreed. I want you to tell me that.
I do disagree with that, simply because of what he said when he imposed the sentence. I've quoted that one in my brief, but just to make myself clear, after reviewing all of the issues involved, including his post-sentencing conduct, I really don't think I can get around the fact that the appellate court is requiring me to enter a sentence which is stiffer than the one that I felt was appropriate based on the language I used. And, of course, at the resentencing, there were additional facts that he was allowed to take into account. He didn't talk about those much, but some of those facts were Mr. Amole had been released. He had gotten jobs. He had gone to school. And this is actually consistent with what was happening when he was on bail before sentencing. So there were better facts, in fact, at the resentencing than there were at the original sentencing. And, in fact, some of the things that the district court judge did, like send him a message, that seemed to resonate with him based on his activity afterward.
So would you say it's a fair reading of what went on, that he felt constrained by the guidelines?
Yes. Actually, I think what this is like is it's like after Booker. Mm-hmm. I put that in my brief. I think this is almost exactly like it. You have the Supreme Court saying the guidelines are advisory, do what you will. You have district courts in some cases saying, gosh, I can't really do anything but give you a sentencing guideline, and this court remanded in those cases. I really see a great similarity in this case where the court's opinion said one thing, and I certainly think that this court gave the district court grounds and reasons and well, the ability to give him a lower sentence. And the district court, for some reason or other, that he didn't explain very clearly, didn't think that he could.
But did he think he couldn't based on he had no new reasons?
No, I think there were...
It couldn't because we had set a floor.
You didn't even set a floor.
No, I meant...
I understand that, but I mean, he didn't really explain that. I have tried. I have spent probably as much time preparing for this appeal, thinking, why did he do this? And I can't tell from the record. And it certainly doesn't seem to me that, it seems to me if he thought that this court's analysis was appropriate, he would have said something along the lines of, well, I looked at it from the Seventh Circuit's eyes, and I agree with them, and therefore I think that a guideline sentence is appropriate. That's the kind of statement that I would have expected from that judge, or any judge.
As opposed to, you're suggesting he felt mandated.
As opposed to, he looked at your opinion, and for some reason, even though he acknowledged that this court said he could give him a lower sentence, he came up to some, for some other reason, he said he couldn't do it. And it's just not clear from the record.
Well, that gets back to my inquiry about, is it because he had no new reasons other than what transpired earlier, and that was age.
Some of the new reasons are his own interpretation of what he said. Now, I know this court, you know, when it decides things, that's the decision. But at the same time, if this court's puzzled by what he said and what he meant by it, and he explains it later on in a way that, for instance, he said that some of the things he was complaining about had to do with the fact that this was a young man and that these mistakes that he was making, perhaps taunting victims, for instance, had to do with the fact that he was young. At the same time, he saw a great promise in this young man. And so, as a very practical matter, and this has happened to me time and time again, when a judge gives a lower sentence than perhaps the person expected or is lower than the guideline range, for instance, the judge gives him a stern talking to. However, if the judge gives him a high sentence or something that's more expected, there's less of a talking to. That's just my impression of what happened in this case.
Well, we don't want to keep what we're doing here as edging up to us doing the sentencing. That's
exactly what you want to avoid. And you certainly don't want to tell district court judges they can't lambast defendants at the same time giving them an appropriate sentence. But no, I agree. That's certainly something the court would like to avoid. The one thing that I wanted to mention that the government mentioned was Roberson. And Roberson is really a very similar opinion in many ways, but on the resentencing in Roberson, there's a distinct difference. The judge in that case understood that she could sentence him to a below-guideline sentence, even though this court's language in that case was much stronger about what the judge should consider when reimposing sentence. In that case, the conflict was between the guideline sentence for armed robbery without a 924C and the guideline sentence with the 924C. The guideline range for the robbery without the 924C, but you included a gun information in the sentencing guidelines, was within the 85 months that the judge imposed, which was 1 month more than the 7-year consecutive sentence. The reason the judge still complained at resentencing was that the judge disagreed with this court's reasoning about whether you can consider a sentence without the 924C when you have a 924C count. And when the district court took this court's instruction in its stride, when it was imposing a sentence, it came up with a 36-month sentence, which was a year lower than the guideline range. So I don't think, for that reason, Roberson is an appropriate case to decide this case on. Unless there are any other questions, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Fullerton?
Good morning. May it please the court.
You know, Mr. Fullerton, let me just start right out, because in reading Judge Guzman's remarks, when he imposed that new sentence of 63 months, I don't see any rationale whatsoever other than his belief that we required a stiffer sentence than the 12-month sentence he originally imposed. I just don't see how we could ever exercise any kind of meaningful appellate review when we don't have any statement of reasons from the district court.
Well, Judge, that's the 63-month sentence, first of all, is a guideline sentence. It's presumptively reasonable on appeal. It is backed by there's ample reason in the record to sentence this man at the low end of that guideline range. This is a lengthy fraud scheme.
Look, a court has to understand that it has an independent obligation to determine what sentence is reasonable and to explain why. He did not articulate why a sentence of 63 months is reasonable, and still apparently believed that the original sentence of 12 months was appropriate. So, you know,
Your Honor,
we're not into crystal ball reading.
No, I understand. One thing that's notable, however, about what happened in the district court after the remand was that all of the reasons that Judge Guzman had offered for or had talked about the aggravating factors or aggravating circumstances of Mr. Mole's crime, that is, he was arrogant, he was displayed an air of superiority, all of those aggravating factors about Mr. Mole, none of them, he said, were inapplicable or that they weren't true or that he retracted them. In fact, all of those facts about Mr. Mole and his crime still obtained at the resentencing.
I'll just bottom line it with you. Again, nowhere in the brief remarks that accompanied the new sentence did the judge cite any of the statutory sentencing factors, you know, the 3553A factors, or any circumstance other than this court's opinion, which could point toward a sentence of 63 months. And this court's own opinion had not said anything remotely suggesting that only a within-guideline sentence would be appropriate. On the contrary, as we heard a few minutes ago, the court expressly left open the possibility that a below-guideline sentence might be justifiable.
Of course.
This case has to go back.
Well, the district court obviously, I think, understood this court's mandate, its remand. It understood that it was able to impose a sentence below the guideline range. There's nothing in the record to suggest that the district court felt constrained to impose a guideline sentence. It explicitly quoted from this court's opinion to the effect that it says on here at the page 7 of our appendix, the court says clearly that their ruling is not that a sentence below the guideline range is not appropriate, but that given what I said and the record that I made, that ruling, that sentence could not stand. So the district court was explicitly aware and understood the court's remand. The district court did not disregard that remand. The district court, its only expression that it felt constrained at resentencing comes at the actual date of the imposition of the new sentence. And this is the appellant's appendix, page 25, where the district court says, I really don't think that I can get around the fact that the appellate court is requiring me to enter a sentence which is stiffer than what I felt was appropriate based on the language that I used. Now, that is true. The court's opinion did require the district court to impose a stiffer sentence than 12 months. 12 months, this panel had held, was substantively unreasonable. So a stiffer sentence.
It doesn't follow necessarily that it has to be a guideline sentence.
No, and this court didn't say that, nor did the district court say that it understood this court's opinion to require that.
Because the district court didn't say anything.
Well, the idea that the appellant is offering is the district court felt constrained to impose 63 months, and that's nowhere evident in the record.
Look at the jump, 12 months to 63 months.
But, Your Honor,
with nothing intervening except good things?
No, there's...
It's pretty bizarre.
Judge, I disagree. One thing had intervened, which was a conviction in 2006 after the original sentencing had taken place. It was a conviction for forgery in line with the defendant's other criminal history.
Oh, well, yeah.
The other thing that intervened, of course, had been this panel's opinion discounting the reasons that the district court had offered for the below-guideline range. The district court at the initial sentencing had offered two reasons for going below the guideline range down to 12 months. One was the defendant's youth, and the other was his that this conviction was his first substantial involvement with the law. And this panel ruled that his youth, standing alone, was not a good reason for going below the guideline range, and that the lack of substantial involvement with the law was just simply not true. He had four prior convictions at the time of his original sentencing, five at the time of resentencing. So I think the way to read the district court's what he said at resentencing is in the way that Judge Flom has offered. That is, I'll have to go back and look to see if there is room, now that I'm resentencing, in light of what the Court of Appeals has said about the reasons I offered for going below the guideline range. That is there room, given what the panel has said about my reasons, the factors I offered as mitigation, is there room in my mind for going below the guideline range? There's no evidence that the district court misunderstood the court's remand or that it disregarded this court's remand.
Well, that's you're getting to where my lingering unease is in this case. Can a fair reading of what transpired at resentencing reflect that, one, the trial judge adopted the earlier reasons as the underlying basis, took into account our view that the 12 months was inappropriate. But my concern is that he may have, if you borrow Mr. McGowan's phrase for a second, overread that he needed to go to the safe harbor of the low end. I know you point to wordage, and I agree, that would indicate he felt we had given license, if you will, to go below the guideline range. But following up on Judge Rubner's noting of the significant jump, although it had to be a jump of some sort to comply with the directions of this court, can we be comfortable that he did not just, as I say, seek the safe harbor of going to the low end of a guideline range? It's. I guess the question is how we interpret those remarks and whether we can be comfortable without just his revisiting. I'm not looking for more reasons. I'm just looking for clarity that there wasn't this, what I would call overreading, or, as I say, borrowing Mr. McGowan's phrase. I mean, do you see where that might be a concern? That's.
I understand that why that might be a concern, Your Honor. I'm not the jump, however, from 12 months to 63 months doesn't concern me because.
No, and I don't want to suggest that I'm labeling 63 inappropriate. It's just, was it arrived at without the direction? In other words, with the independent analysis that I can go there, but. Was it, as they do at basketball, the possession arrow pointing that he had to go there because of our opinion?
Well, as I said, I don't think there's any evidence in this record that the district court felt constrained to go there. He was constrained to go higher than 12 months, and I'm suggesting that when he went back and looked, he found that, in light of what the court had said about the mitigating factors he cited at the original sentencing, that in fact there was no reason to go below the guideline range. There was no mitigation to go below 63 months. If you discounted Mr. Omoli's youth and this mistaken impression of his lack of substantial involvement with the law, there was no reason to give him a break. In fact, the district court at the original sentencing had said, I'm giving you a break which, frankly, I don't think you deserve. The panel cited that.
But let's go back to the two resentencing hearings. And Don't you think it's evident that the court still believed a sentence of 12 months was the appropriate sentence? I mean, the first time, after he explained, you know, his words disparaging the defendant, he says that at the original sentencing, those words were meant more as a chastisement, meant more to scare Omoli into beginning to understand the stupidity of his conduct and thereby serve as a basis or a catalyst for beginning the rehabilitation process. I still feel that in terms of the punishment, the need and hope for rehabilitation, and in terms of prevention of future misconduct, the sentence of imprisonment for this defendant at that time was appropriate. Okay, that's the first hearing.
Right.
At the second hearing, he reiterates that the critical remarks have been meant as a sort of wake-up call to this defendant in order to act as a catalyst. But, and then he says that our sentence, that, you know, our rejection of his 12-month sentence as being too lenient, he says he was requiring me to enter a sentence which is stiffer than what I felt was appropriate based on the language that I used. He still thinks his 12 months was appropriate, but, you know, he's going to do what he thinks we want him to do.
Stiffer than 12 months. Not, he doesn't say that I'm required to go to 63 months. He says the Court of Appeals has required me to impose a sentence stiffer than 12 months. And that's true.
Than what I felt was appropriate.
Well, I think he's acknowledging that his judgment of 12 months was substantively unreasonable, as this court had found. He may have still believed that it was correct, but I think what he's saying is that he's not going to continue that fight that he lost. But I think he's very clear that he's not saying that he's constrained to go to 63 months. But rather that I was mistaken, the court is requiring me to impose a stiffer sentence, and as I'm suggesting, that in light of the fact that the mitigation I relied on was not...
Look, you're a perfect assistant U.S. attorney.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But don't you think it would be helpful to all of us if it went back?
Well...
He's now served more than twice the original sentence. 14 more months on top of the 12.
Well, he had an additional
then
24.
He had the consecutive.
So he had a 36 month sentence.
Right, but
not a 12. We're talking in terms of 12. But if we're going to get into the mind of the district judge had to impose a 36 month sentence.
Right. But we now have more than the 4. I mean, no, the 4 years is more than. Well,
more than 36.
It's more than the 36.
We don't want to be in a sentencing business.
I don't want to be in a sentencing
no,
business.
No, I've done that. Then there are all of us.
I'll never forget when I was coming up here, I said to my beloved late husband, well, thank God, I'm never going to have to sentence anyone again. And he said, right, now you're just going to have to keep them there.
Right. Well, for all the reasons I've offered, Your Honors, we submit that the judgment of the district court should be affirmed. And so unless there's any other question, time's up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. McGowan.
Unless there are any further questions.
Well, Mr. McGowan, let me just ask you. Your remand request would be for what kind of statement to be made to the district judge?
Well,
obviously you want to know what we're going to say if there was a remand opinion. But what is it that you would be asking the district judge to say in justifying whatever sentence?
Something along the lines of what the Supreme Court said in Spears. We said this in the first place, meant it. Go forth and sentence.
And if he says, I clearly understand that I could go below.
On a third resentencing?
Yeah, let's in a hypothetical world, if that were you were successful in convincing this panel that that's the appropriate route, and the district judge says, I knew I had the ability to go below. I stayed within the guidelines not because I had to, but I thought that that's where it should arrive. If he opened the hearing with that, would there be any more to be said?
Don't think so. I mean, one of the problems that Judge Relfer has pointed out is that there really isn't much of an explanation, and so we're all just hypothetically guessing about what the district court... I mean, as I was sitting here listening to the government's clever answers, I was thinking of some of the other things that I'd come up with as possible grounds. And there are all kinds of reasons why the judge may have done what he did. I just don't know. Thank you, Your Honor.
Right, well, thank you, Mr. Fulton. Mr. McGowan, thank you. And, of course, always an additional thanks to the Federal Defender of the Central District for the special and able work they provide outside the district to this court. Case is taken under advisement. Court will stand in recess.
You're perfect, too.
I'm going to take 30 again.